Podcasts tuned to yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There's Romance in the Sewer. Later on, an adaptation of the motion picture Waterloo Bridge from 1941. But first, it's the show Romance with a story called The Valiant Lady from July 17, 1954 on CBS.
Now, from Hollywood, Romance.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Ralph, Earl of Norfolk. I beg leave of thy indulgence to regale thee with a tale of romance and chivalry. It is, too, a tale of Lady Margaret, the most beauteous damsel ever to grace the face of the earth.
With Whitfield Connor as Ralph, Earl of Norfolk, and Shirley Mitchell as the beauteous Lady Margaret, we bring you Sidney Marshall's story of brave knights and daring deeds as we present The Valiant Lady. It was on the outskirts of the small, peaceful village of Saint-Hilaire in Brittany that the forces of William the Conqueror finally crushed the rebellious arms of Hereford and Norfolk, the traitorous earls who had dared to wage open insurrection against him. But it was a battle bitterly won and at great cost, primarily because of him whose armor bore the proud escutcheon of the House of Norfolk. Now, that selfsame Ralph, Earl of Norfolk, wounded, defeated, but head still held high, is brought a prisoner into the tent of William the Conqueror.
Sir Ralph, the end has come. Thy foolhardy passage at arms against thy king is o'er.
Thou art no king of mine, William.
Strange words from him who was once my right hand, to whom I would have entrusted my kingdom, my very life.
Ye have only thine own arrogance and ruthless disregard for others to blame, William.
Silence! Silence, lest I strike thee dead where ye stand.
The edge of thy sword cannot harm that which is already dead, William. You have already caused me to lose that which is dearer than life, my Lady Margaret.
I cannot understand thee, Ralph. Have ye no explanation to offer, no words to speak on thine own behalf?
Aye, there are words, William. There are explanations. But to thee, to whom conquest, to whom fire and the sword are the very marrow of life itself, they can mean but little. Yet, I will try, William. I will try. There is a forest of oak in England, William, standing tall and stately in ancient grandeur, where the countryside slopes down toward the banks of the River Wye. On the day of which I speak, my dearest friend, Roger FitzOsborne, Earl of Hereford, and I were at the hunt. We were giving chase to a fine, high stag, when suddenly there was a sharp twang of bowstring, a glittering flash of arrow, and we reined in our horses. The stag was lying there in his death throes. The prize had been wrested from us both.
Here now, what's this I see?
It would seem that the fair beast ye had marked for thy prey, Roger, has fallen to the shaft of another.
Oh, it is plain enough to see that, Ralph. But who would dare? If I could but place my hands on the miscreant, I promise thee, Ralph, his skin would make more bowstrings than now exist in all England.
'Tis in truth the most dire punishment ye threaten, Lord Hereford. Nevertheless, I cannot do aught but confess my guilt before thee.
Was a slim, comely lad in page's dress who uttered those words. As he stepped toward us from the edge of the clearing, bow still in hand, there seemed to be a laughing, mocking light in his eyes. A hint of a smile on a face that attempted to appear contrite.
Thou? Thou art the one who...
Aye, my lord. And lest thy anger at losing the beast beclouds thy memory, I beg leave to refresh it. Thou hast most graciously granted me permission to hunt upon thy land.
Does the lad's tongue speak the truth, Roger?
Aye, that it does, Ralph.
Then in all justice, let the lad take the animal and welcome.
I would fain thank thee, Lord Norfolk, for thy gentle aid. But such a noble beast deserves a noble board. Allow me, then, to make a present of it to thee.
To me, lad?
A most generous bequest indeed.
Ah, but ye may not think so when ye hear the requirement that passes with it.
Requirement?
That the venison grace the supper board at Hereford Castle this night, and that ye present the first and choicest cut to my Lord Hereford's sister, the Lady Margaret.
I do not understand, lad.
Ah, ye have never met the Lady Margaret. After ye sup tonight, ye may have cause to change thy mind. I bid thee good day, my lord.
It would have been small wonder, William, if I had not been both puzzled and piqued by the lad's strange words. And so it was that when we returned to Hereford Castle and entered the great hall, I looked eagerly about seeking the young page. He was nowhere to be found.
Ah, you seem bewildered, Ralph. Art thou looking for something?
Thou knowest I have been seeking the page, Roger, most diligently. I could almost swear thou hast clapped him into the dungeon keep to prevent my finding him.
Nay, Lord Norfolk. Thou hast only to look behind thee to find the one ye seek.
Aha, so there ye are, lad. I have... Oh, thy pardon. From the sound of thy voice, I had thought...
Aye, my lord. What was it ye thought?
It was not possible for me to tell what I had thought. Suddenly, instantaneously, all thought was gone. For in the presence of that beautiful, unbelievable vision I saw before me, it was my heart that o'ertook my mind.
And what was it ye thought for my voice, my lord?
'Tis the same voice, the lad's voice. Yet it... Oh, I beg of thee, my lady, put an end to my bewilderment and confusion.
Nay, allow me to do so, Ralph, by presenting thee to that dear slaying page and my sister, the Lady Margaret.
Thus it was, William, that I met Margaret of Hereford, my valiant lady. She who became more to me at the very moment of meeting than glory, kingdoms, fealty, life itself. For the next 6 weeks I dwelt at the Castle Hereford, 6 weeks that passed as though in a dream in which nothing else existed for me but she who was the Lady Margaret. But as the end of my stay approached, I knew the time was fast at hand when dreams must either come to an end or be replaced by an even more unbelievable reality. And it was upon a balustrade, overlooking the fields of Hereford, transformed by the magic brush of the moonlight into a fairyland, that the decision was made.
'Tis a moment of passing strangeness, is it not, my lord Norfolk?
Strangeness, milady?
Aye, thou art a brave and dashing knight. Yet here on this balustrade, alone with me, thy courage is gone. Thou art as meek and mewling as a newborn kid.
I do not understand, milady.
Ye depart from the castle on the morrow, my lord. The time remaining to us is short and precious. Why dost thou waste it, then? Why do ye not speak?
Ye know, then, Margaret? Ye know of my love for thee?
Could I not see it shining from thine eyes 1,000 times a day, though?
Then if ye knew, Margaret, what of thee? Dare I hope. There I believe.
Dost thou not know of the legend of Hereford, my lord? That he who presents the first and choicest of freshly killed venison to a damsel has plighted his troth to her, and that she, by accepting, has plighted hers to him?
Margaret, that stag he killed in the guise of a page, he made me swear to present it to thee. And that night at supper it was accepted by thee. That can only mean...
Aye, Ralph, I love thee too.
Oh, Margaret.
Nay, wait, Ralph, wait. I have seen too many of these marriages of Norman nobles. Marriages arranged by grasping William to further his own interest. Marriages in which the women pined in their castles alone, forgotten, uncared for, by the man who rides to war and to the hunt. Is this the kind of wife ye seek, Ralph? Is this what I am to become?
If thou art to become my wife, Margaret, it is to become the friend, the companion, the sharer of all my thoughts. It is to be my consolation in adversity, my joy in prosperity, the leading star of all my efforts, the light of all my hopes. This is what ye must wish to be with the men ye love. And this is what ye shall be, I promise thee. There is no need to tell thee what happened next, William. My message to thee in Normandy, telling of the wondrous news, was sent post-haste. Your reply to my message, thy blessing, William, arrived by herald on the morning we were to be wed.
This marriage is not according to our plans. We forbid it. William.
We will return to romance and our story, The Valiant Lady, in just a moment. Murder and mystery are the business of Detective Danny Clover, born and bred in the colorful Times Square district where he is now assigned to homicide. Every Sunday evening, CBS Radio again brings you the stories of the people of the gay white way. Detective Danny Clover calls his beat the lonesomest mile in the world, in spite of its glamour, its lights, its noise. Tune in, Broadway is my beat, tomorrow night on CBS Radio. And now for the second act of The Valiant Lady as we return to romance.
I had forgot thy ever-present fear of insurrection within thy ranks, William. I should have known that news of a union between Hereford and Norfolk would only spell the danger of a future rebellion to thee. Ye should have known better of me than to cross my heart, and thus ended forever my allegiance to thee.
He forbids it! He forbids it? By what right does this William forbid it? Does he forget that it was to our swords that he owed his elevation to the throne?
He forgets more than that, Roger. He forgets that we are free men, that he does not own us, body and soul, as he would like to own all who dwell within the borders of his kingdom. If he were here, my answer would be hurled into his teeth.
He would defy thy king then, Ralph, for love of me.
If thou wouldst but say the word, Margaret, my gage would be hurled at the entire world.
Thou hast my word that I love thee, Ralph. That thou shalt always have. But lest thy words come from resentment and anger rather than from my heart, come. See for thyself what thy defiance would mean.
Ye never were one to leave thy meaning in doubt, wert thou, William. Nay, there was no mistaking the meaning of that solid ring of steel, of armored man and horse, of lance and sword and buckler that surrounded Hereford Castle.
There, Ralph, is what faces thee if we are wed. The armed might of William the Conqueror.
Aye. What Margaret says is truth, Ralph. Would mean open rebellion, insurrection against thy king, with thy head on a stake as its almost inevitable end.
What dost thou say now, Ralph?
I can only say this, Margaret. For love of thee, I would fling my gage were the odds a thousandfold as great. But the decision is not mine alone to make. 'Tis thy heart that must supply the final answer.
Then let my heart answer thus. I will be thy consolation in adversity, thy joy and prosperity, the leading star of all thy efforts, the light of all thy hopes. This I promise thee.
We were in the tiny chapel of Hereford Castle, wed to the accompaniment of the clangor of arms being readied for battle. Wed, knowing full well that our future together might be o'er before it began. The simple ceremony was soon completed, and even as we left the chapel, a fully armed and richly caparisoned knight rode boldly forth from the ranks opposed to us and approached the castle. The device upon his shield marked him plainly, William, as thy brother, Odo of Bayeux, attesting full well as to the import placed by thee upon this affair. He crossed the drawbridge and reined up before the portcullis. I was there to meet him.
Thou hast received thy king's command, Sir Ralph.
I have been informed of William's wishes. Aye, Sir Odo.
And thy reply to them?
Tell William that those within these walls owe no fealty to tyrants. No word or deed of his could have prevented the uniting of the houses of Hereford and Norfolk.
By those words, thou hast condemned thyself as traitor, Sir Ralph.
I give thee 1 hour to surrender thy person. At the end of that time, my trumpets shall sound the charge. Hereford Castle and all within it shall be destroyed.
That hour was spent in disposing our meager forces as best we could. Then there was naught else to do but wait. I stood there on the battlements, knowing full well that one day, two, three, and the struggle would be o'er.
Courage, my darling, courage.
Margaret, these battlements are no place for... Margaret, that suit of mail, the longbow in thy hand, what is the meaning of this?
Well, surely it is clear to thee, Ralph. The strength of every arm shall be needed. I can send a shaft as straight and true as any yeoman here.
Nay, Margaret, this cannot be. I cannot allow thee to imperil thy life here.
Ah, hast thou forgot so soon then, Ralph?
Forgot?
The words that were uttered upon these selfsame battlements in the moonlight not so long ago. Thy wife was to be thy friend, thy companion, the sharer in all...
They were not meant for times such as these, Margaret.
One does not pick and choose the times when one shall be a wife and not be. It is not a question of whether I should be here or not. Here is where I must be.
Nay, Margaret, nay, thou dost not know this bloody butcher, Odo. He would as lief...
Our work is about to begin. Courage, my darling, courage.
A ring of gleaming steel surrounding Hereford began to come alive and to move with doom-filled certainty toward our walls. The sunlight danced gaily on deadly sword and mace and lance. Ever tighter became that steel ring. Ever more swiftly it closed around us, spiked and deadly as the embrace of the Iron Maiden. And then it was upon us. There was no time for thought, for wonder, for fear then. Only time to beat down one furious assault before the next wave was moving for the attack. But always beside me was the calm, steady twang of a bowstring, sending shaft after shaft with deadly aim. And always within me was the calm, steady voice that kept repeating...
Courage, my darling. Courage.
It was only with the coming of the night that the battle ceased. And we scarce had time to count the fearful toll amongst us when Odo of Bayeux was before the gates.
Hear ye! Those within the walls of Hereford, I call upon thee to surrender. Fair terms we offer every man within the walls, excepting the traitorous Earl of Norfolk.
And what are thy terms, Sir Odo?
Life, liberty, and arms to all.
And what of the Earl of Norfolk? What offer thee to him?
Death on the edge of the ditch. By the headsman's axe!
We knew full well what the word of Odo meant, and there were none in my command who would even listen. And so the next day the attack was resumed, and upon the next, and with the coming of each night, Odo's terms were repeated.
Life, liberty, and arms to all, excepting the Earl of Norfolk. To him, death! On the edge of the ditch by the headsman's axe.
It was upon the third night, with the knowledge before us that our sorely depleted forces could not last another day, that our decision was made. And it was my valiant lady Margaret who made it for the badly wounded Roger and me.
There is only one recourse left to us, my brother, my husband. We must accede to Sir Odo's terms.
Art thou mad, Margaret? Dost thou wish thy husband's head to roll into the waters of the Wye?
Restrain thyself, Roger, lest ye open thy wounds again. There is some plan underlying these words of Margaret's.
It is a simple plan, my lord. It is for Ralph to escape from Hereford.
Escape? With Odo's men encamped on every blade of grass within a bowshot of the walls, thou hast indeed lost thy mind.
Nay, Roger, ye forget the tunnel built beside the postern that leads to the riverbank. One man, unarmed, could float with the current past Odo's lines, and thence make his way to France and freedom.
Aye, it could be done. It could be.
But it shall not be. Oh, Margaret, dost thou really think I would desert thee? Turn my back on thee, upon Roger, upon our loyal men, to save my own life.
Nay, it is more than that, my beloved. It is our entire future. Our only hope for happiness and love together.
But what of thee, Margaret, and the others?
Ye shall be risking capture and death at the hands of Odo's men. We must risk depending upon the terms of his word and surrender to him. Both risks must be taken, and with God's help, both will succeed.
Ye know the rest. How I made my way to France, William. How my loyal friends, whose bodies now lie on the fields of battle outside this tent, took up their arms. Not on my behalf, but on behalf of freedom from tyranny. On behalf of a valiant lady. No word of whom has reached my ears since the night I left Hereford.
I have heard thy story, Ralph. I find it as incredible as thy treachery toward me. No woman is worth the loss of earldom and life, nor does such a woman as ye describe possibly exist. She was not found by Odo in the ruins of Castle Hereford.
She was not found?
Nay. This entire affair was but a pretext to attempt to seize my power for thyself. Its end has now come. Odo promised thee death at the edge of the ditch by the headsman's axe. Such is to be thy fate now. Take him without the tent, Odo, and see that the sentence of execution is...
Stand where ye are, Sir Odo.
Mark, what means this? What means...
The next arrow shall find your throat rather than the walls of a tent, Sir Odo. Here, Ralph, come beside me.
Margaret, ye are alive.
The tunnel and river served us well, too, Ralph.
Art thou mad, woman? Do ye think ye can invade the tent of thy king armed with a bow and arrow?
It's not a matter of thinking, William. It has been done. Thy guards lie dead outside under Roger of Hereford's blade. And horses await to make good our escape.
Stupid fools, do ye really imagine ye can escape in this manner, get free with thy lives?
What does it matter, William, whether we live or die, so long as it is together? But then one such as thee would not understand about such things, perhaps. We bid thee adieu.
Guards! Sound the alarm! Guards!
Silence, Odo, silence.
Silence, my lord. But they're escaping.
Let them escape.
Let them?
I let them. I would not understand, she said. Aye, perhaps not. But this much I can understand. I would trade my power, my kingdom, my very life, if I could be worthy of the love of one such as she. If I, William the Conqueror, could be beloved by such a valiant lady.
Romance is produced and directed by Fred MacKay. Editorial supervision is by Het Mannheim. You have heard The Valiant Lady by Sidney Marshall. Whitfield Connor was heard as the Earl of Norfolk. Shirley Mitchell as Lady Margaret. Ben Wright as the Earl of Hereford. Ted DeCorsia as William. And John Daner as Odo. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to hear Romance next week and every Saturday morning at this same time. Tomorrow night on CBS Radio is My Little Margie, starring Gail Storm and Charles Farrell. Tomorrow's episode finds Margie and her father making an all-out effort to find boyfriend Freddie a job. There's many a laugh on CBS Radio with My Little Margie. It's yours tomorrow night over most of these same stations.
Romance, untuned to yesterday from the 17th of July, 1954 on CBS. This is an hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, the Gulf Screen Guild Theater takes on an adaptation of the 1940 motion picture Waterloo Bridge, reportedly one of the earliest films to involve the Second World War in its plot. This broadcast would take place about a year before the U.S. even got involved in the conflict. Vivian Leigh and Robert Taylor first starred in the Oscar-nominated motion picture. Joan Fontaine and Brian Ahern take over the roles next in the CBS episode from January 12, 1941.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Your host, the director of the Star's own theater, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone.
your neighborhood good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Tonight, we're privileged to present one of the most beautiful plays and motion pictures of all time, Waterloo Bridge, starring Joan Fontaine and Brian Ahern. It's a dramatic love story against a background of thrilling music by Oscar Bradley's Gulf Orchestra with Frank Tours conducting. But first, suppose we hear a brief comment on human nature by our old friend Bud Heaston. All right, Bud?
You know, folks, a good example of human nature is the way most of us just naturally assume that our automobiles will start off, take us where we're going, and get us back. That is, until some freezing morning when the car won't start. And then the longer you keep stepping on that starter, the shorter your temper gets. So why not take a stitch in time and use that real quick-starting team Gulf Pride Motor Oil and Gulf No-Knox Gasoline? Because even on the coldest day in the middle of the winter, it's not too cold for the right grade of Gulf Pride Motor Oil. No, sir. The instant you step on your starter, free-flowing Gulf Pride helps your motor turn over. Yes, and then even inside those stone-cold cylinders, Gulf No-Knox Gasoline fires in a flash and your car is ready to go. And you could be sure, too, that after your motor is warmed up, Gulf Pride Motor Oil gives you perfect lubrication, and Gulf No-Knox Gasoline gives you a smooth, quiet-running motor, knock-proof performance under all normal driving conditions. So stop at the sign of the Gulf Orange Disc first thing in the morning and get Gulf's quick-starting team, Gulf Pride Motor Oil and Gulf No-Knox Gasoline.
That burst of applause, ladies and gentlemen, is for Brian Ahern and Joan Fontaine, who are just entering our Gulf Theater stage. They step to the microphone, the house lights dim, and we present Robert E. Sherwood's play, Waterloo Bridge, with Joan Fontaine as Myra Lester and Brian Ahern as Captain Roy Cronin. There's the downbeat for the orchestra, and the play begins. London, 1939. The lights of Waterloo Bridge are hung against a yellow curtain of fog. A chauffeur-driven car pulls out of the slow-moving stream of traffic and noses to the curb. Its passenger is a handsome man in a colonel's uniform, gray-haired, erect, and reserved. The chauffeur turns and speaks.
Is this all right, Colonel Cronin?
Yes, yes, that's quite all right, Thomas. I'll get out here.
Yes, sir. You've a little over an hour before your train leaves, sir.
An hour, eh? How patterns repeat themselves. Yes. I remember another time I was here on Waterloo Bridge. And I was bound for France then, too.
That was in 1916, wasn't it, sir?
17. 17 in June. Yes. I stood here at the rail. I was a young captain then. Was leave almost over, having a last look at London.
It's a fine sight from the bridge on a clear night, sir.
Yes, and it was a clear night 22 years ago. 22 years ago. All that time. And yet it's as clear as though it were.
Keep moving, please. Keep moving.
Oh, sorry, officer. Just stopped for a last look at London.
I'll be on leave, sir.
Yes, yes. Going back tomorrow.
Well, good luck, sir. Keep moving up ahead there, please. Keep moving.
Listen, the siren. Zeppelin. They're coming over.
There it is again.
It's a rain.
Oh, I don't believe it can
be. Yes?
Is that an air raid warning?
I'm afraid it is.
Oh, dear, what's
where do we go?
To the underground station, on your right.
Hurry, Kitty,
now, keep your heads. Don't run now. Walk.
Oh, dear, my bag.
Come on, come on. They're coming over.
My lucky charm.
Little fool, are you tired of life?
I've got to have my charm. I've had it for years. It brings me nothing. All right, I'm ready.
All right, come along, come along. I say, can't you walk any faster?
Would it be too unmilitary if we were to run?
No. On the contrary, I think it'd be a great idea. Well, you can stop being frightened now. It's a wonderful institution, the Underground.
Thank you for helping me.
Oh, no, not at all. I don't see any of your friends.
Oh, perhaps they took another entrance.
A cigarette?
No, thanks.
Oh, no, of course not. I suppose you're still at school, aren't you?
School, aye.
What, am I being funny?
Look over there. See that poster? That's my school.
Madame Olga Kirova.
Kirova. Oh. And a Russian petite ballet. We're at the Tivoli Theater.
Oh, look here. You don't mean to say you're a dancer?
Certainly. Our act goes on at 10.
What do you usually do after the show?
Oh, go home, go to bed, read myself to sleep.
Haven't you ever heard that reading in bed's bad for the eyes? Oh, look. Now, how about having supper with me at the Candlelight Club?
Oh, I couldn't. Madame Kirova doesn't allow us to have social engagement.
All clear.
I'll pick you up at the stage door.
Oh, no, it's quite impossible.
I'll be there at 11.
Oh, no, I tell you, it's quite impossible. But if you are there, please don't let Madame Kirova see you.
Will this table do, Captain?
Yes, thank you, yes. Very nice. Well, what do you think of the place?
Oh, I like it. Only...
Only what?
Well, I really shouldn't be here. Suppose Madame Kirova heard about it.
Oh, nonsense. You know, when I left you this afternoon outside the air raid shelter, I couldn't remember what you looked like. Not for the life of me. I thought, was she pretty? Was she ugly? What was she like?
Do you think you'll remember me now?
I think so. I'm sure I will. For the rest of my life.
Really?
Come to think, if the nations hadn't gone to war, if there hadn't been an air raid this afternoon, we might never have met.
Oh, let's not blame it on the war. It was dreadful.
Yes, of course it's dreadful, but it does make you aware of the preciousness of life, as you never are in peacetime. It seems to telescope time. It makes your ears so acute that you can hear the minutes, the seconds flying by. It makes it possible for two people to meet, to look into each other's eyes, and to know in that instant that they're in love.
Do you think we're in love?
Think? I know we are.
But you don't even know my name, nor are yours.
Well, that's easily remedied. I'm Roy Cronin, captain in the Rendlesham Fusiliers. My father's a duke, and I have a scar on my left knee from the time I fell out of an apple tree at the age of 8.
My name's Myra Lester. I was born in Birmingham. I'm an orphan. And why did you climb the apple tree?
To get an apple for your first and only rival, my governess. Oh, come on. I'm too excited to sit still. Let's dance, shall we?
Ladies and gentlemen, we now come to the last dance of the evening. We hope you will enjoy the farewell waltz.
I'll write to you, Mara. Will you answer me?
Of course.
When I get my next leave, we'll come here again.
Oh, yes.
This will be our place. This is where we shall always recapture the scene. I'll write you the train and the hour that I'll be in, and you must meet me on Waterloo Bridge. I'll step up just as though we'd never met before, and I'll say, oh, pardon me, miss, I believe there's an air raid. May I assist you to the bomb shelter? And then you'll say... Darling, what's the matter?
Nothing. It's just the music. Music always makes me cry.
Wonderful evening, wasn't it?
Yes. Thank you very much. When do you leave for France?
Tomorrow evening. Look here. You do think we'll see each other again, don't you?
Perhaps. Well, here's the door.
This where you live?
Yes.
Well, nothing to do about it, is there?
Nothing but to say goodbye?
I suppose so.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mara, dear.
Goodbye, Roy.
Why? Please, leave me first.
All right.
Mara, wait.
Yes, Rolf?
Mara, will you meet me at St. Matthew's Church at 11 tomorrow morning?
Yes, but why?
Because we're going to get married.
Roy, you're crazy.
I know it. It's a marvelous sensation.
But Roy, be sensible.
No, not me.
But you hardly know me.
Oh, I'll discover you. I'll spend the rest of my life doing it.
Oh, Roy, you're only asking me to do it because you feel you've got to live your whole life in 24 hours.
We are going to get married. It's you. It'll never be anybody else.
Oh, but how do you know you want me when the excitement of the war is forgotten?
Mara, I never was so sure of anything in my life. The moment you left me, after the air raid. I knew I must find you again, quickly. And now that I find you, I know I must never let you go again. Does that answer you?
Oh, Roy.
Oh, Roy. Is that all you can say to your future husband?
No, not all. The expression's old and time-worn and terribly hackneyed. But I love you.
Darling. Darling.
Kitty,
where have you been?
Shopping?
Well, Madame Carova's been looking for you, and your captain phoned twice.
Did he? Mm-hmm. I wonder why. He had to go to the barracks, and I went on a buying spree. Look!
Whose dress is that?
Mine. I spent my last penny for it.
Are you crazy?
Oh, yes, quite. I bought a hat, too. A stunning little hat and gloves and a bag and shoes, everything. They're for my wedding.
Myra, do you mean it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm going to be married. This morning, Kitty, it's Matthew. Oh, Kitty, I'm so madly happy.
I can't believe it.
Neither can I.
Oh, I guess I'm crazy, too. Look, I'm crying.
I've been crying all morning.
Oh, Myra, darling, darling, I'm so happy for you. Hey, see, look at the clock. If you're going to be at St. Matthew's at 11, you'll have to... I'll answer it. Hello? Yes? Yes, she's here. Just a minute. Myra, it's your captain calling again.
Oh. Hello? Hello, Roy? Yes? What? Oh, no.
Wrong.
When? Oh, that's terrible. Can't they give you just one more day? Oh, of course I'll come. Right away. I love you, too.
What is it? What's happened?
His orders have been changed. His train leaves in half an hour.
But the wedding?
There won't be any wedding. I'm going to see him off.
Where?
Waterloo Station.
But you can't. You won't be back in time for the show, and you know Madame Carova. She'll dismiss you without notice.
I don't care. I've got to go.
Myra, please. She'd never forgive you, and jobs are scarce. Don't do it, Myra. Think.
I've got to go. Don't you understand? I've got to go because I may never see him again, Kitty. Oh, I may never see him again.
Three months later, September 1917, Myra was discharged from the ballet when she returned to the theater after saying goodbye to Roy at Waterloo Station. And Kitty, her roommate, quit her place out of loyalty. They're now living in a shabby third-rate rooming house in a cheap neighborhood. Myra's just coming in.
Hello, Kitty.
Well, what luck. Did you get the job?
No. It was filled.
I had a hunch it would be.
They said they put me on the waiting list.
Oh, my. What are we going to do?
Oh, I don't know. We can't get jobs in a show. We can't seem to get jobs anywhere.
I'm getting scared. I've never been scared before. I don't like it. Look, why don't you write your captain?
And tell Roy we're out of work?
No, that we're broke. Flat broke.
Oh, no, I can't do it, Kitty. Maybe I've got a stupid sort of pride about it, but... Oh, let's wait a little longer. Something must turn up. It's got to.
All right. Hey, there's a letter for you on the table.
A letter?
Mm-hmm.
Kitty, it's from Roy.
Yeah? What does he say?
Kitty, his mother's coming to London.
What?
Yes, he wants me to meet her on Thursday, 1 o'clock, that little tea room just off the Strand. Kitty, just imagine, his mother. What will I do?
You'll meet her, of course.
Yes, but I wonder, will she like me?
Sure you wouldn't like a cup of tea while you're waiting?
No, thank you. I'm sure she'll be here any minute.
Perhaps you'd like to look at the evening paper.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope she'll like me. She must like me. American troops moving up. I wonder what he's told her about me. Battle rages in Cambrai sector. What will I say to her? Will I tell her I love him? Earl of Honor, killed in action. Crawford Patrick. Has Roy told her he loves me? Killed in action. Crittenden Joseph. What will I do if she doesn't approve of me? Killed in action. Crockett. Charles. How can I tell her I can't live without him? Killed in action, Croft, Edward. Killed in action, Cromber, Ralph. Killed in action, Cromber, Stephen. Killed in action, Cronin, Ross.
Why do you think I've been nursing you the last month? You went out in the rain the first time my back turned to get pneumonia.
Kitty, here. With this hot water bottle at your feet. Kitty?
Hmm?
How did your show go tonight?
Oh, same as usual. Have you written Roy's mother and explained why you didn't wait at the tea room to see her? Had you been sick in bed ever since?
No. There's no reason why I should trouble her. If Roy's dead, there's no tie between us. Did you have a good house at the show?
So-so. Why?
You didn't ask me why I went out. I went to the theater. I thought I'd surprise you. You weren't there.
Oh. Well, I didn't want to worry you, Molly. I'm not in that show anymore. I've got another job.
They told me you were never in that show. How have we been living?
What's the difference as long as we live?
Where does the money come from, Kitty? Where have you been getting it?
Just where you think I've been getting it. Mara, I tried to keep it from you, but...
You did it for me.
No, I didn't. I'd have done it anyhow.
You did it for me to get me food and medicine. I should have died.
No, you wouldn't. You think so, but you wouldn't. I want to go on living, and so do you. We're both young, and it's good to live.
Oh, Kitty, how could you do it?
Well, I guess. No jobs, no boys who want to marry you. Only men who want to kill a few hours because they know it may be their last.
Oh, Kit. Well, I suppose you think I'm dead. Oh, no, no. Who am I to judge? Haven't you kept me alive and fed me and sheltered me? Oh, Kitty. What's become of us? What are we going to do?
Yes, her name is Myra. Call this number and ask if she's got a friend.
Are you lonesome, buddy? Well, look up a girl named Myra at the Tivoli Dance Hall. She'll cheer you up.
Hello, Myra. The armistice brought you luck.
No, Kitty. War or peace makes little difference to us.
There's a lot of military police about today. You better be careful.
Oh, thanks.
Well, the train's in. Here they come. Cheerio, Myra.
Hello, soldier.
Welcome home, soldier. Hello. Welcome home, corporal. Hello, handsome.
Myra.
Welcome home, Myra. Sergeant.
Myra. Myra.
Roy.
Myra. Myra, I can't believe it. Oh, Myra. Myra, it is you. It is you. It's really you.
Roy.
Here, let me look at you. Oh, I'm not dreaming, am I? Oh, to think of finding you, waiting for me. Why, it's a miracle.
Roy.
I'm alive. Yes, I'm extravagantly alive. Oh, the months I've waited for this moment. I began to think it would never come. How did you know I was coming? Did you telephone to Mother? No, darling. None of that.
Roy.
It's over. It's all over. It's all over. We're together.
What they said, I read in the paper.
Didn't you know I was indestructible? Why, how could I die when you were waiting for me to come back? I've been in a prison camp for the best part of a year. Head wound. Nearly passed out. That's why I couldn't write you. But now everything's all right.
Yes. Everything's all right.
Oh, I've got 1,000 questions to ask you. What have you been up to? Are you still dancing?
Oh, Roy.
Darling, Have things been terribly bad?
Oh, very bad.
I wasn't here to help you. Oh, never mind. But I'll make it up to you. Why, you're never going to cry again. Except with happiness.
Oh, if only I'd known you were alive. Best you were in the world.
I'll never leave you again, Myra. Never. No, my darling. Now then, Miss Lester, I have a program. I'm a man of action. We'll telephone Mother that we'll both be up to the country on the evening train. And in the meantime, we'll be married at St. Matthew's Church.
Roy, no.
What is it? You're not giving me the sack, are you? There isn't someone else.
Oh, no, Roy.
There isn't anyone else. There couldn't be. I've never loved anyone else. I never shall. That's the truth, Roy.
That's all I want to know. Now, come on, darling. Come along. We're going to do some shopping. Then you go home and get packed while I make some arrangements. Believe it or not, darling, we're going to be married by nothing less than a bishop.
Kitty, I know what you're thinking, but I can't give him up. I won't give him up. I'm going to marry him and devote the rest of my life to making him happy.
Yes? And where are you going to hide?
Hide?
Where can you live with him where you won't be afraid of someone stopping you to say, hello, Myra, what luck?
Oh, I don't care, Kitty. I've got a right to live and I'm going to take it.
I wasn't thinking of you, Myra. I was thinking of Roy.
Roy?
His family, his career. You think it's fair to him?
But I love him.
Oh, Myra, darling, I'd rather see you happy than anything in the world. But could you bear to see his love turning to hate? Could you face him as his eyes cursed the day he met you? Myra, why are you staring at me? Myra, where are you going?
Oh, I've got to think. I want to be sure.
Gertie.
Bad night, ain't it? Fog's as thick as pea soup beyond the bridge. Limey, that river sure looks uninviting tonight, don't it?
Yes.
There's a train in at 9, going down to the station.
No.
Well, I'll go off on my lonesome then. Toodaloo.
Goodbye.
Well, now you can stop being frightened. It's a wonderful institution, the underground.
All clear. All clear.
How about having supper with me? At the Candlelight Club.
Will this table do, sir?
It makes it possible for two people to meet, to look into each other's eyes, and to know in that instant that they are in love.
Ladies and gentlemen, the last dance, the farewell walk.
I never was so sure of anything in my life. I must never let you go again.
No, Madame Kolova, she'll dismiss you without notice.
I'll be all right. You mustn't worry about me, because I'm coming back.
I'm getting scared. Why don't you write Roy and tell him we're broke?
Roll of honor killed in action.
Roll of honor killed in action.
Killed in action. Cronin Roy.
Call this number and ask for Myra.
I'm not going to let you out of my sight. Not till we're married, you understand?
Well, well, well. Hello, Myra. Busy tonight?
You're never going to cry again. Except with happiness. We'll be married at St. Matthew's. And I'll never leave you.
Could you face him as he cursed the day he met you?
Darling, what is it? Tell me, is there someone else?
Could you bear to see his love turning to hate?
Is there someone else?
I was thinking of Roy, his family, his career.
Is there someone else?
No! No, I've never loved anyone else. I never shall. That's the truth, Roy. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
He was standing right there. I saw a jump.
Remember you, Myra, for the rest of my life.
Colonel Cronin. Excuse me, sir.
Huh? Oh. Oh, yes, Thomas.
Your train, sir. You've only 15 minutes to make it, sir.
Only 15 minutes, eh?
Yes, sir. You've been standing there at the railing for nearly an hour, sir.
Yes, yes, sir. I was just dreaming, Thomas. Remembering another war. And an old love story. Oh, well, Thomas, there's still some work to be done for a little while. The Waterloo Station.
Yes, sir.
that, ladies and gentlemen, was the Gulf Screen Guild Theater's production of Waterloo Bridge. From the applause, there's no doubt that the audience here in the theater loved it every bit as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. And we're happy, too, that we were able to present Joan Fontaine and Brian Ahern in their first broadcast together. As you know, their performance, and the performances of all the stars who appear here in the Gulf Theater, are donated. And in return, Gulf gives generously to the Motion Picture Relief Fund to help in the great work of building a home to provide for workers in the picture industry who can no longer provide for themselves. Once in a decade, a story comes along that is so beautiful it becomes an overnight sensation as a novel and the hit of the year as a motion picture. Just such a story as the one we're bringing you next week. Lloyd C. Douglas's great love story, The Magnificent Obsession. The stars, two of the greatest names in motion pictures, Myrna Loy and Don Ameche. So be sure to listen next week when Gulf brings you Don Ameche and Myrna Loy in The Magnificent Obsession. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying, good night, everyone, for your neighborhood good Gulf dealer. Don't forget, you have a date here in the Gulf Theater next Sunday night when we present Myrna Loy and Don Ameche in Magnificent Obsession.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 12, 1941 on CBS. Closing out this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.